financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. I'm Denise Fozella, along with Dr. Frances Raham of Hug Your Student Debt. This show is made possible by Greenfield Community College, increasing access to higher education at a fraction of the cost, and by People's United Bank of Amherst, home of tea with Trish. And this morning, we're talking with Dr. Frances Raham about something that is that all of us do at some point, and that is procrastination. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Denise?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It sounds a little negative, I guess, but I'm looking at it actually in a positive way. And believe it or not, some of the things that we have, some of the reasons that cause us to procrastinate can have a positive effect on us as well as a negative effect.
Okay.
Which was a surprise to me a bit.
That is a surprise, but I'm willing to play along with that.
fair enough. I like everything to be positive if it's possible. But I am fascinated by this topic because of all the things that can get in our way about getting out of debt, it seems that procrastination is at the top of the list. And none of us, nobody comes into my office and says, I know the reason I'm in debt is because I procrastinate. They'll list it as one of many topics. You know, well, we had these things that happened to us financially, and then there was this problem, and then this other stuff happened, and I just kept putting it off. So I wanted to know, and I've been asking for years, what caused you to put it off?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people sometimes will tell us that they heard me on the radio or they saw us on TV for years before they came in. And they'll say things like, oh, I wish I did this sooner, right? And I'll ask, well, why? Why didn't you do it sooner?
What are some of the answers that you get?
Well, I was hoping to find one or two things that I could just point and say, if I can solve this problem, I can help people not to procrastinate. But it turns out that there are, you know, there's just a litany of reasons that people procrastinate. And so one of the things is that the goal might seem to be too abstract, right?
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too vague. I want to get out of debt.
Yeah.
I
what does that mean?
Weight. Mm-hmm. I want to be a millionaire. You know, it's just, I want to be a millionaire, I guess is a little more specific, but still not enough, right? So when we say, I want to get out of debt, it just seems like, who doesn't, right? But if we can be very specific and say, I want to pay my credit cards off in 2 years. I want to pay my mortgage off in six. I want to have a budget I can live with. I want to do these specific things. And we do help people with that with coaching. But in the beginning, they don't know that. All they know is somebody's offering to help them get out of debt. And so I think this is in part why people fall prey to some of those programs that all you have to do is, you know, call up and sign a piece of paper and they're going to take care of everything and get you out of debt, because it's unthinkable about how you will manage that one piece at a time when it seems like an overwhelming goal.
So it's hard to connect with that goal because it's so abstract. And then it might be difficult to even comprehend the amount of debt that we have.
Yeah.
To face the goal.
Facing the goal is tough sometimes. It's why we ask people to put in their information in the website, and then they will see how much debt they actually have on paper, not just a sense of it, and not just saying, well, this is what I have in credit card debt, right? When they see what they're paying out in mortgages and student loans and car payments and all of that, then they can see it. And once we can see it, with a click of a button, they can see what their current timelines are and what our timelines are individually. So we can get very specific. And instead of being abstract, we can say, oh, look, there's your credit card paid off in 3 months. There's your car paid off in 20 months, whatever it happens to be. There's your mortgage in, you know, 6 years. And so then it's easier to move forward with the plan. But initially, just getting people to go and put information in the system, we all know, okay, we've got debt. Otherwise, we wouldn't be thinking about this. And that form seems really scary, right? There's a thing called form fear.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to put information into a form. So there's about a million reasons why people could procrastinate.
So many fears. Fear really sounds like it's at the root of procrastination. And avoidance is one of those ways that fear gets manifested. I remember, and I'm not going to say who, I don't want to throw this person under the bus, but I remember as a child seeing somebody's mail piled up on the table, bills unopened. Did not even open them to see what they were. And if the phone rang, it was not answered because it was a bill collector.
Yes. So I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say that that person also suffered from some anxiety. And there's something called a feedback loop. When anxiety is present and it's a task that they really don't want to look at and they procrastinate, the procrastination causes them to feel more anxious. And there's this awful feedback loop. And the longer it goes on, the more the stronger the aversion is. And stacked up bills is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
You know, now on the other side, you could say is there's that lottery idea, right? As long as I don't open the envelope, I'm a wealthy person, right? As long as I don't open the envelope, I don't know what that bill is. And so believe it or not, there's also a thing about procrastination that people put it off for a sense of excitement, if you can imagine that. So think of a student who will not cram for a test until the night before.
Oh, right.
Because they see that process as being tedious or boring, or they don't think they're going to do it well. And somehow waiting until the last minute causes the excitement to grow and very often can cause a positive result as well as a negative result, depending on the person and how they process that.
Brings about an adrenaline rush in a way.
I guess so. It's not something I do. I personally like to get my ducks in a row and have them done. But, you know, we all have these reasons we procrastinate. One of the most interesting things I thought was optimism. Optimism can cause people to procrastinate.
And how so?
Well, you think, okay, this is a problem now, but I'm going to get a raise soon, or my business is going to do better, or after I graduate, I'm going to make all this money. So I'm optimistic toward the future, and that means I don't have to look at getting out of debt now, because it's all going to be okay someday. So I tend to be an optimist. I tend to have, you know, lots of fresh ideas, and I always want to put off whatever I'm working on now to get to the next fresh idea. So the whole underlying issue here is our behavioral patterns, right? Our sense of self-control and willpower. And I think most people would say, oh, if you procrastinate, you don't have good self-control or you don't have good willpower. But I would say that that might only be true in a certain area. You might have great self-control or great willpower in other areas of your life. Maybe you're terrific at your job or with your parenting skills or, you know, helping other people. But when it comes to your own stuff, your own finances, it's just too icky to want to look at. And so we put it off.
And I certainly did that as well. You're listening to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ryan of Hug Your Student Debt. And I am her co-host, Denise Vozella, the news director here at WHMP. And it took me at least a few months of hearing your commercials on our radio station before I called you. And then I had to go home and have that conversation with my husband before we called you, that I told him, explained to him what I heard in the commercials and what I thought this might be able to do for us. I brought it up before, that lifeline that we were looking for. And so even I procrastinated in calling you.
And think about that, because you were really very close to the situation. You knew there was credibility because I was here at your station, right? And even with that, there's still that obstacle. There's still whatever reason it is. And I think it's different for everybody. I mean, there's lots and lots of reasons. One of the things that I thought was very interesting is that we might see the problem as happening to a future self, and we don't have a real connection to that. So an example would be, my doctor says I have diabetes, and if I don't change the way I eat now, 2 to 3 years from now, I could have a real medical problem. Okay, so I might perceive that, if I'm good at procrastination and denial, I might perceive that as something that doesn't have a sense of urgency, it doesn't need action right now, it's going to happen to me 2 to 3 years in the future. And I almost see that as happening to a future self.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if somebody said, you have a medical problem that requires you to change your diet, this is what you need to eat now, very specifically, and you need to do it now or a week from now, you're not going to be here to tell us about it, then that might cause me to take action immediately and not procrastinate so much. Unfortunately, with debt, it's less, I think it's still life-threatening, but it's less medically life-threatening. And so even though people know, okay, this is really coming to get you and there's a problem, until people reach what they perceive as the bottom, the rock bottom, they don't move to get out of debt. Now, for some people, rock bottom is just that they just can't send any extra to their debt this month and that disturbs them. And other people have to have, you know, a letter telling them they're going to court. But that's what happens when people, you know, don't have a connection with our future self about the debt.
So what do you do about that? Other than picking up the phone and calling you or going to your website and filling out the form.
Sure. Well, what one thing you can do is you can take something like that that might seem overwhelming, for instance, or seem abstract, and break it into very specific pieces and begin to make a plan. Now, you don't have to make the whole plan, right? That's another thing we procrastinate about, believe it or not, is this idea of perfectionism. Okay, we're going to get out of debt. Let's sit down and make the plan, and it must be right from the start, and let's make sure we read all the books and we do all the stuff. Just take one step, one tiny little step. Whatever it is for you is okay. If it happens to be calling us, great. If it happens to be just sitting down and saying, today I'm going to track all the expenses I spend, and I'm going to start to get a handle on what I'm spending. Tomorrow I'm going to go and fill out a form online. On Wednesday, I'm going to call a coach. On Friday, I'm going to call an attorney. Whatever it happens to be very specific about it and make it immediate. Make it so that you're doing it right now. Because after you just make the very first step, the rest of the stuff gets easier. It falls into place.
Once you take that first step, I've heard that that can create motivation to keep going, right?
Yeah.
That it gives you that inspiration. Oh, I've done this. Now I can do more.
That's absolutely true. You know, we're talking about self-control and willpower, and those are the things that can get in our way, right? There can be demotivating factors. Things like, I'm just exhausted when I come home at the end of the day, and I keep telling myself I'm going to fill out the form or get out of debt or do whatever, but I just don't have it. I'm done. I'm depleted, right? So every time you make decisions like this, you're depleting your mental reserves a bit. And when you're trying to make a lot of decisions, you're exhausting your mind to some extent. And so until you recharge your batteries, you're not going to be able to really get out of debt the right way, right? So one thing you can do is figure out when you're best. If you're best in the morning, don't put it off until the end of the night. Take a morning on a weekend or sometime when you can and start working on it right away, but only do little bits at a time.
Great advice from the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ryan of Hug Your Student Debt. And we are going to take this quick break. We'll be right back with part two of our conversation about why do we procrastinate so long about getting out of debt. Welcome back to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ryan of Hug Your Student Debt. I'm your co-host, Denise Fozella, and we thank the people who make this show possible. People's United Bank of Amherst, home of Tea with Trish, and Greenfield Community College, increasing access to higher education at a fraction of the cost. This morning, we're talking about why we procrastinate so long about getting out of debt. And it's something a lot of us do. It's almost universal, isn't it, Frances?
I think procrastination in general, you know, is just an interesting topic because we all do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it. Nobody's immune to it, right? And sometimes it has a positive effect and sometimes it has a negative effect. Some people, you know, if they're afraid of being judged, which is one of the reasons we might procrastinate, that can drive them toward solving a problem. I don't want my relatives to see my name in the paper that I couldn't pay my bills one day and I had to file a bankruptcy, so I better get on this and get out of debt. But most of the time, I think the fear of being judged or, you know, any of the fears that we have get in our way. And it's just very difficult to overcome those until there's some catalyst, there's some reason that you suddenly feel, okay, today is the day I have to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would prefer to have people not feel that way, not be pressed into it, and start to see this as a positive approach to money management.
I think
that would be great.
That there's also, in some cases, a fear of deprivation, that if I take this step, then I'm not going to be able to do the things that I want to be able to do. And I don't
right.
want someone else telling me what I can and can't do with my money.
Right.
So there might be that kind of fear of control, a lack of control.
So that's why I'm the money doctor and not the money monster.
Okay. Yes.
Because I had this problem. I was in a lot of debt, and I had to be able to get out of it. And I didn't want to sacrifice my lifestyle. So what we did was create a system that could get you out using the same money you're already spending and sometimes less, right? Sometimes I look at people's numbers and I just say, you know, no wonder you're taking on credit card debt. You simply have been loaded up with too much debt. Your payments are too high. And so we have to adjust that. So I think, ironically, people expect that the first thing we will say is, okay, don't use your credit cards, freeze your debt. You're now on the ramen noodle diet for the rest of your life. And by the way, no vacations. You're not going to buy a car. And this is what you're doing for the next 8 years. If you want to get out of debt, you must live in privation. And the truth is, we know that won't work. That's a foolish way to go at it. In order for someone to have a successful debt plan, they have to be able to live a decent lifestyle. They have to feel better about their money. It's the same as a diet. You cannot lose weight long term on some diet that is unrealistic. And you know there will be a birthday party or the holiday where you're going to want to eat that food and has to be allowable. So it isn't that we tell people you can just spend willy-nilly and still get out of debt. That would be ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't have to worry that we're going to cramp their lifestyle because we're really working with exactly what they have now.
I think also there's a lot of anxiety around this whole thought of getting out of debt. I mean, what does that even mean? We spoke earlier about wrapping your mind around that, but it creates a lot of that kind of anxious feeling.
Money in general, I find creates that for people. Even if they think they're very good at investing, there might be a part of the financial picture that they're not happy about, like the debt, or speaking to their partner about it, and that really elevates our emotions. And so whenever, you know, it's sort of the fight or flight thing, right? Whenever we're faced with something that's very dangerous like that, or we perceive it as being very dangerous, it all seems larger. Everything seems magnified. So you were talking earlier about you had a conversation with your husband about, you know, getting out of debt. And I know we're going to get your full story someday because you've offered it to us.
Yes.
But, you know, just leading up to that, the conversation itself is almost never as scary as we think it will be. When, you know, we're thinking about getting out of debt, it just seems overwhelming. And really, it can be done very methodically. And the odd part is staying in debt is the what should be really, really overwhelming. But because we're already there and the payments go out every month, you know, we just let it go on, and taking action to get out requires a little courage.
You're reminding me of some of the things that I've gone through with regard to money in my lifetime. And one of my fears has been in the past that I can't face it. I don't have it in me to face everything. So it's just too overwhelming.
Yeah. And that can be true not only in a general sense, but in a very specific sense. Like we call it task aversion. The best example I can think of in terms of money is usually building a budget. Most people, when you say the word budget, will just about run screaming, you know, because it conjures up this image of, you know, I use this analogy, trying to cram a size 12 foot into a size 9 shoe, right? And so the task seems so awful, we don't want to do it. Who wants to have that terrible medical exam that you didn't really want to have? But sometimes you're forced into that medically. But with debt, you're not so much forced into it. And it can be really scary. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that the perceived reward is so far out in the future. Sure, I'd love to get out of debt, but gee, 10 years seems like a long time, or 5 years seems like a long time. And we don't really see it as, okay, I want to get out today. I pick up the phone, I make a phone call, and I'm out of debt. Problem solved. Check the box, move on, right? Mm-hmm. It takes some, my mother used to say moxie, right? It takes a little moxie. That's a really old word, to face it, right? But what are your alternatives, really? I mean, you can stay in debt for a long time, and you can continue to try to get out of it, trying different things, and maybe you'll be successful and maybe you won't. But even that compounds it, Denise.
What I have found in every single case that I've ever faced something that I was afraid of, the fear was much worse than the reality, and actually facing the issue, and money has been definitely right up there, facing it has eliminated a lot of the anxiety.
Yeah, facing it and having a solution.
Yes.
So just facing it is a little
step
bit like
one.
Yeah, it's a little bit like hitting your head on that brick wall. You know, most people who have debt have faced it many times. And the reason they might have a fear of failure is because that's the reinforcement they've gotten. I tried this. It didn't work. I ended up back in debt. I tried that. It didn't work. Here I am again back in debt. Every time you do that, your resources are worn down a little bit more and a little bit more. and you become more suspect about whether you will ever be able to accomplish that or not.
Your emotional resources. Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And when you think that you might fail, that fear of failure is enough to procrastinate. I don't want to look at that. Okay, here's a great example. A student might procrastinate about taking the exam and might fail the exam rather than studying for the exam, because they would almost rather that the procrastination, the fear of taking the exam, the procrastination was the reason to blame instead of they didn't understand the material. People will perceive all of these things as, you know, a series of huge hurdles. I'm afraid to face this. I feel really anxious about it. So there's the anxiety.
It's overwhelming.
Part. There's the task. Right. It's overwhelming. There's the task aversion. I really hate to look at money. There's the form fear. I don't want to fill out a form because I'm afraid somebody will have my information. I might fail. So I'm not sure I want to do that. I'm going to have to call that person and I'm going to be judged. They're going to tell me that I didn't make good decisions so we try to remove all those obstacles. The thing that makes it work for people is if they can just get over the hurdle and begin to take the steps to get out of debt, fill out the form or call us or whatever, then you're going to get a coach who is experienced, who went through what you're going through right now, because I don't hire anybody that hasn't been a client, right? So they've been through what you've been through, and they understand it, and they'll listen and help you with whatever it is that might be happening for you in procrastination, because we're all different.
So motivation can start to happen. Motivation to stop procrastinating can start to happen when you just take one step.
Yeah, I think so. There's no doubt about that, that any one step is progress. It doesn't have to be the whole plan. One of the things that we say in the investment world, and it's true in debt as well, is that people suffer from analysis paralysis. I want to get out of debt. It seems like such a big project that must mean it requires a lot of effort, a lot of research, a lot of planning, a lot of time. And so I go out there and I want to make the perfect decision. I want to make sure I'm not getting ripped off, and I want to make sure that I have the best debt plan possible. And so I read and I read and I read and I send away and I talk to people and I fill out forms, but I never quite pull the trigger because I'm not sure which one's the right one. And that's like saying, I don't start my diet because I'm not sure which diet I want to start. Any diet would help you get to your goal, right? And it's the same with debt. Just start to do something, anything, toward changing the direction that you're going in.
And I want to ask about the having a partner in this process, a spouse or a living arrangement, someone that you share debt with, that you have to get on board. And what if they're the procrastinator? How do you overcome that?
Well, there's always divorce, So what can you do? Well, you can do a few things, I think. And I don't profess to have all the answers to this. I just want to help people.
And you have helped a lot of people. You've seen a lot of cases.
Yes. Yeah. Thousands of people for sure. So what can you do? Well, it depends on the spouse and it depends on your relationship. If you have a good, solid relationship and you can have this discussion, make it a pleasant discussion. It's not drudgery, make a nice dinner. It's not a surprise attack. Tell them in the beginning, I've got a problem. I'm managing the household finances and, I don't want it to be scary, but, we've had a conversation several times about doing something and we can't quite get there. And in order to get there, I think we have to agree on what direction we're going to take. So can we talk about it after dinner and even say, look, I'll handle the bulk of this because I'm the one doing it, but I need you on board with me. And see what they'll say. Usually people are pretty happy to help rather than be in the doghouse. Yeah. Yeah.
So we are talking about procrastination with regard to getting out of debt with the Money Doctor this morning. And how can people contact you, Dr. Frances Ram? And what can they expect when they get someone else either on your website or on the phone?
Sure. They can reach us at 413-774-5555 or 773-3333. Or on the web at hugyourstudentdebt.org or powerdowndebt.com. And what they can expect when they get someone on the phone is that there will be a live person. You won't be stuck in a phone tree. If we're not available right at the moment because we're in session, we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. But you'll get a real person to talk to who will be firsthand knowledgeable about what is going on for you and can answer any questions and schedule a consultation for you or a webinar or whatever is appropriate and whatever works with your schedule.
Thank you, Dr. Frances Ram of Hug Your Student Debt. This has been Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, made possible by Greenfield Community College, increasing access to higher education at a fraction of the cost, and by People's United Bank of Amherst, home of Tea with Trish. If you missed any portion of this program or want to hear any of the programs in this series, you can hear the podcasts all at WHMP.com. I'm Denise Bozella. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll be back again next week.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
She had two IRAs that were worth approximately $25,000, and she closed them out to pay off credit cards.
I was desperate.
And I really believe that's when she said, I got to do something, because that was going to be part of our retirement. And the next thing was going to be is, am I going to turn in mine?
I never, ever considered cashing his in.
No, but I did.
And I thought, okay, you're obviously never going to do this on your own, Jill. It's not working.
Once she started paying the credit cards off and seeing results, then she was happy with Hug Your Money. I felt relief.
Debt, budget, retirement. Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we've not seen each other for a little bit, but we're back in action.
It's true. How was your vacation?
It was good. A couple of days off, and that's always nice. A little bit of a staycation, you know.
Yeah, yeah. This is what happens when you're in radio, right?
Somebody else might
cover some things, but not enough. So while you were gone, I got some phone calls, a couple of phone calls, about credit card rates. Like, how is this not usury? Right? We used to throw that term around, usury. It's actually a biblical term, but we used to throw around the word usury. Like, you can't charge somebody too much money because it's usury. There are usury laws. I think, you know, some people would say loan sharking, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get to charge? How is that legal? People will say. So I did a little digging about how that is legal because it bugs me too, you know, and mm-hmm. I knew some of it, but I will say we'll talk a little bit about the details today, not just about why these interest rates are through the ceiling and how they get away with charging you this,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but what can you do about it? I mean, there are things you can do about this.
Okay.
So I think, you know, we always try to tell you a solution to the problem. As much as I talk about here's the problem and I get on my little rants because I get angry about it, that it just seems unfair to me that you should have to pay that kind of interest rate. And, you know, in defense of the large companies, I always say, well, you know, nobody puts a gun to your head to sign this contract, right? We volunteer to get these credit cards. But the other side of the argument is, you know, you may not know what that rate is going to be until after you've applied, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, rates change. These credit cards have these variable rates. So, you know, you might sign up for something at 0% for a year, or you might sign up for something that had an 8% rate thinking it's always going to stay there, but it's probably linked to some benchmark like Prime or LIBOR or something mm-hmm. like that. So it always seems like there's
fine print too, like you might miss where it says, you know, your interest rate's really low, but if you happen to miss a payment or be late, then it jumps to like 27% for the rest of your life with a credit card. You're like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And they're covered.
Yeah, it's called the default rate. And we'll go through what makes that, what triggers that. Because you're absolutely right. You might have a credit card. You always say really intuitive things, Jess. I love having you. So you might have a credit card that's, say, at 16%, and you think, well, it's really high, but I'm doing okay. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have this default rate, and you're saying, what happened here? And there's a number of things that can happen. So let's start with that. Why not? We're here. the default rate thing. Okay. So the first thing that can happen is you're late on your payment. Now, there are two different kinds of late when we're talking about late on your payment. The one that everybody thinks, I'm afraid of that because it's going to harm my credit. Mm-hmm. And some people who are very credit conscious say, I don't want to have it pass the grace period because it's going to harm my credit. But it doesn't. The grace period, let's define some of these terms that they love to throw around the fine print that you talked about. The grace period is the number of days between the due date and the date at which they assess a late fee. Mm-hmm. So let's say that your payment is due on the 1st and you have a 15-day grace period. You're not going to get hit with that late fee until the day of the 16th or 17th, depending on their calendar, right? So they'll apply a late fee for you at that point for you.
So nice of them, yeah.
They'll apply a late fee to you.
I picture them gleefully behind their keyboards like late with like a little smiley face because they get an extra $15.
Wait, 15. Wow.
Whatever.
That's all.
Yeah.
20, 25, 30, $35. Yeah. Some even higher than that. I had somebody the other day say something about they thought it was $45. I'm not even sure that's legal, but maybe it is. If they're charging it, it probably is. And we'll talk about how those things can be legal. But yeah, they assess that late fee, and now you owe that on top of your balance. And guess what? You owe interest on all of that next month. So that's just the late fee period, that grace period. So if you miss your due date and you miss your grace period, they're going to charge that late fee. It doesn't affect your credit until you're 30 days late.
Okay,
so
yeah.
If it's due on the 1st of this month, on the 1st of next month, if you still haven't paid it, now they can report you as 30 days delinquent on your credit reports.
And that's good to know, because I think a lot of people correlate, like if you get a late fee, that automatically means a ding on your credit.
Yeah, and it's not. It's a slap on the wrist and some money out of your wallet, but it's not affecting your credit at that stage. But it will when you get to 30 days late. Now, I could say not everybody reports to the credit reporting bureaus, but pretty much all the national banks, all the credit card companies report to credit reporting bureaus.
Yeah.
So that's one way the default rate can trigger is that you're late and they want to say, well, they're a high risk. Another way they can trigger it is they can pull your credit reports, because you sign up for this, believe it or not. When you agree to this credit card application, one of the things you're agreeing to is I'll let you check my credit, soft check my credit anytime you want, basically. And so they can just soft check your credit as a regular check on you to make sure that you're not a high risk candidate. And if they start to see that your debt to income ratio is too high, they can trigger that default rate.
So they can raise the interest rate even that you signed up for if your credit changes in the period that you have the credit card?
Yes.
That totally seems like that shouldn't be legal.
Well, you know, from their side, if you're trying to protect yourself against bad risk, you want to be able to do that.
I guess, but they've already said like, hey, we think you're worthy of a $5,000 limit based on this, and then they're going to change it in the middle of that? I don't know. I think that's...
It's not the same as a mortgage, you know, where you, if you get signed up for a mortgage and they have security in your home, for instance, if you don't pay your mortgage, they can collect, you know, they can foreclose on your home.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as that. They have more risk, which is partly why they charge these high interest rates, because honestly, they know some default will happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are all kinds of little things in that fine print you talked about that, that cause those rates to go up. If you're delinquent more than two times in a year, they can raise your rate to the default rate. And the default rate could be much higher. Like, let's say that your interest rate on your credit card was capped at 18% for whatever reason, the state law, federal law, whatever it was that capped it at that time in our pretend world of rates right now. And you're delinquent more than two times a year or two times a year. They can just raise it 28, 30%, you know. Now, The reason we're talking so loosely about interest rates, and I'm saying my pretend world of 18% cap, is because you would think that your state, right, the state that you live in, would mm-hmm. have some laws about how much you could be charged for interest on a credit
card.
Yeah,
regulations for sure. Yeah.
Well, they do. Some okay. states go by contract law. Some states go by usury laws. But guess what? The Fed has no cap on it.
Okay.
We have no cap on interest rates under the federal law.
That's scary.
I know. Even hearing it come out of my mouth, there's this pause about, what do you mean you have no cap on it? So in 1980, I'm trying to think of what it was. In 1980, the Depository Institutions Deregulation and Monetary Control Act of 1980, mm-hmm. DIDMCA for short.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan was president. We had yep. Reaganomics. We had, okay. 1980, that law weakened the state usury laws and said that even if you said that if a credit card was based out of state,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, let's say you're in Massachusetts, but your credit card national bank is based in Delaware mm-hmm. or South Dakota.
Yeah.
They can charge you rates based on Delaware or mm-hmm. South Dakota.
Yeah. There's always ways around it. So they can charge higher.
There are a lot of exemptions. And so even if your state, like Massachusetts, actually has usury laws in place, and this is a time when I should remind everybody that I'm not an attorney, especially attorneys. If I'm making a mistake, please tell me. Or give me additional information. I would love to hear about this one. This one's fascinating to me. So Massachusetts had those laws in place, and I think it was 18% in Massachusetts. I'm not positive of that, but I'm pretty sure it was 18%. But because of the federal laws, you know, they can charge whatever they want, basically, based on the state they're incorporated in. Now, many national banks, if you look at your credit card statement, you'll see Delaware, South Dakota, Delaware, South Dakota. And what else? Delaware and South Dakota. Because the laws there are so loose about what they can charge. I will say, you know, the Attorney General has a consumer guide about this. And if you're at all a geek, or if you're just interested in learning more about this, I'll give this again at the end, but you should check out that guide. It's an Attorney General's Guide to Consumer Credit. And there's a phone number too, which is 617-727-8400 that people can call. And I'll give that again at the end so people can take it down. But there's so much to this. And I did say that we would talk about the things that you can do to counteract this. And there are things you can do. But I think it's important to just remember that at a federal level, national banks are, I don't want to say more protected than consumers, but they have a huge lobby and there's a lot of money at stake here. So
yeah.
If you think about this like a court case, you're going to go up against a national bank in court. How do you think that's going to fare?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they can outlive you.
And the hard thing is too, we've talked about this before on previous shows, but when you look at some of those companies that can charge 30% or whatever they want for a really high interest rate, it's usually the people that are desperate for credit or money at that point that are going to get those cards. So I just feel like maybe you don't look at the red flags as hard if you really are in a situation where you need it.
You know, it's an interesting twist because I'm often defensive for my clients, right? For the public
mm-hmm.
This impression that is given to us, the stigma about debt, which is just what you said. The people who are in the most trouble, who are the most desperate, will accept those rates.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say not quite the case always. In fact, often okay. not the case. And here's what people don't understand. When I talk to people who have no debt or who had lots of money and never had a problem with money, they often are judgmental about people who get into monetary problems. And they say, well, what were they thinking? Why were they so irresponsible? And, well, they just signed their name and bought campers on credit cards, you know. Sometimes that's the case, but often it's not the case. And the hard fact here, the hard reality is that if that was really the case, then we would only have people with terrible credit in desperate situations paying high interest rates. And that is not true. We have mm-hmm. well-meaning people who go to work every day, pay their bills, try to save what they can, send their kids to school, try to be a good neighbor, and they're paying these interest rates. And it happens because of what we talked about earlier. It's not the same as your mortgage. You can't rely on it like a fixed rate loan. Mm-hmm. These companies have variable rates. So what happens? You know, first of all, if you're really desperate and you have bad credit, you may not be getting approved for that credit card.
Right.
Maybe you will, but it's likely that if you're in that bad of shape, you're not getting that credit card anyway. So it's the middle of the road people. It's the people. I mean, who do you want if you're a national bank? You want people who are going to pay their bills, who can tolerate it when you jump that rate to 30%. And in the second half, we should go into how credit card companies design their minimum payments, because it isn't necessarily tied to that interest rate. So what happens, Jess, is that you get people who are well-meaning, who take on a credit card because they need to, or they find it a good idea to do, and they maybe accept a 15% interest rate, let's say, and they're chugging along just fine. And then bam, something happens and they miss a payment. They miss two payments, right, in the year.
Yeah.
And it defaults to that rate. And now they're stuck with that balance at a new 36% rate or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's how that happens to people. And then because the rate is so high and the payment is so low, because of the way they're not tied together, which we'll talk about, that's where you start to get into the quicksand. So it really isn't, in my opinion, in my experience, it's not about, you know, poor money management at the beginning, taking on a credit card with a high interest rate.
All right. I've got a couple questions on that for you, and we'll have much more. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Tired of juggling your finances? Your HUG financial coach can help. HUG Your Money, so unique, it's patented. For more information, visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Okay, Jess. So, you know, when I thought to myself this morning, we're going to talk about credit card interest rates, I thought, is this really an interesting topic? And then I decided whether it's interesting or not, it's valuable. People need to hear why this happens, what they can do about it. And so I promise you, we won't close this show without giving you some specific things you can do about it and some details on it. But before the break, I mentioned we should talk about how these credit card companies create, you know, calculate their minimum payments.
Mm-hmm. It's not based on the balance?
It's based on the balance, but most people think it's based on the interest rate. So they think when my interest rate is higher, my payment is going to go up. Well, that would be logical. That's the way most loans work, right? If you had a variable rate mortgage and your interest rate goes up, so does your payment.
Right.
Okay. But credit card companies, as I love that we call them credit card companies. You know what? These are banks. Some different company that issues a credit card. These are the same banks giving you your mortgages and your automobile loans, but now they're charging you for credit cards. And we separate that so that we don't blame them psychologically. I don't want to get my loan from a bank. I want to get it from a bank. I don't want to get it from a credit card company. Same thing.
Okay. Same thing. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest about it. They're national banks. A good example is Chase. You can get a mortgage from Chase. You can get a car loan. You can get a credit card, right? It's a national bank. Okay. So, but I like to refer to them as my little cuties. These credit card companies, these little cuties, they love to do things a certain way. And one of the things they do that is so dangerous for people and why we say stay out of credit card debt or get out of credit card debt if you can, is this. All right. When your interest rate goes up, let's take a credit card with a $10,000 balance. Okay. When you sign up, let's say it's a 0% rate. Let's just make things simple. It's 0%. Okay. You sign up for a $10,000 credit card and you get your bill in and it says your minimum payment is $200. Okay. So you pay $200. Mm-hmm. That is basically, well, not basically, it's exactly 2% of your balance, right? There's no interest rate on it. It's zero.
0%.
2% of 10,000 is $200. Okay. Let's suppose the interest rate jumps up because of one of the things we're talking about, or just that, you know, they've reviewed the account and the interest rates are going up. Maybe the interest rate expires, the 0% rate expires, and now you're at prime plus whatever. When you're enrolling for these cards, it'll tell you that you're going to go prime plus whatever. So let's say prime is at 3% and they're going to add 12% to it. Okay. So now your interest rate jumps from 0 to 15%. Your payment may or may not go up from $200.
And but only so much is going towards the principal, right? And the other is going towards interest?
Yes. And if it does, it may go up slightly. So for an example, as an example, that same $10,000 balance with a $200 payment on it at 0% might now have a 15% interest rate, but your payment might be $220, $225.
Okay.
So this is where it gets dangerous, because what happens is, of course, what you said. Now, more money is going to interest, less to principal. And if you start to look at an amortization schedule, which is fancy talk for the schedule of how each payment is broken down over time, how much goes to principal and how much goes to interest and how your balance drops. If you look at that amortization schedule, you will see these credit cards stretch out beyond your wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. It's really common for us to say to people, after looking at all the debt they put in the system, oh, I see you have a mortgage, some credit cards, some student loans, and a car payment. Yeah, it's going to take you 37 years to get out of debt. And they'll say, why 37 years? My mortgage is a 30-year mortgage. It's my biggest loan, and I've been paying it for 10 years. Take a look at those credit cards. The hardest part about that is that unless you call the company and you get to a supervisor who knows what you're talking about, and you say, I want to understand, you know, if my interest rate goes up, how do you increase my payment? Unless you can really get to somebody who understands that, you're going to get the same answer, which is, oh, well, you know, we charge you, and they just read it off the fine print.
Right.
We charge you prime plus whatever. Yeah. But you don't make your minimum payment based on that. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what you're charging me in interest. But if you're not adjusting the payment in relation to that, it's taking me longer and longer to get out of debt because you're just taking more interest from me. And people don't understand it. And I may not have done the best job of explaining it here, but I hope I've caused people, you know, some pause to think about, oh, yeah, that's the problem. The other thing is, we talked about 0% cards. You could have that 0% card for a $10,000 balance and a $200 payment. And you could actually move that debt to, let's do it in reverse. You could have an 18% card with $10,000 on it and a $200 a month payment, because they're calculating that payment based on your balance, not on your interest rate. If it factors in, it factors in a little bit. So let's take that idea. You're about ready to play the credit card game. You have a $10,000 balance at 18% and you're paying $200 a month. So you call around and you get a card that says you can move it to 0%. It may or may not have a 3 or 4% fee to transfer it, right? Mm-hmm. On which you're going to pay credit. So you're going to bring your balance up by 3 or 4% and then you're going to pay interest, excuse me, not credit. You'll pay interest on top of that. But that's aside from the fact for this scenario. So let's say you move that 18% to a 0% card. Now you're really happy. You got 0%.
And I know a lot of people that do that.
Yeah. So it may be a good thing. You're going to pay less in interest. But what happens if money is tight, and when your bill comes in, because of the way that credit card company calculates their minimum payment, maybe they charge you 4% of your balance. And now your minimum payment has gone from $200 on the 18% card to $400 on the 0% card.
Okay, so you need to look into all of this stuff before you start to transfer stuff thinking you're going to get a better payment.
Yeah, have I numbed you with numbers? I'm sorry if I have.
No.
I just want people to understand that there's more to think about than just the interest rate. In the scenario I just gave you, are you paying down your principal faster? Yeah, you got a 0% rate and you're whacking $400 a month on it. Of course you're paying it down faster. That's great if you can afford to do it. If you cannot, you've just put yourself into a danger zone.
All right. Question. I think I probably know what the answer to this is, but I know we're talking about if you have credit and you got approved for $5,000 at a low interest rate, and then somehow you made a late payment or whatever, and they decided to adjust it. Do they ever adjust it the other way? Like your credit has gotten better over the terms of the credit card, and then they say, oh, you're doing really good. We're going to lower your rate to 5%.
I don't know that I've ever seen it automatically adjusted lower. It might happen. But I do see offers go out to people saying, you know, you've been a strong customer with a good customer with a strong history, and we're offering you another card with our company at a lower mm-hmm. rate. And they often will switch the balance, move the balance for you from one card to the other as a courtesy. Mostly you have to ask for it. You're absolutely right about that.
And then the other question I had, oh, go ahead.
No, please.
The other question I had for you is just when you're thinking about getting a credit card, what would you say is a good range of rates? Like, would a red flag go up if it was above 16%, 18%, 10%? What's like the good range of like, these are good ones to get, and then stay away from these at all costs unless you absolutely have to?
That's a really good question. And again, we're looking at this from interest rate only. And mm-hmm. so I would say, of course, you want something that has a lower interest rate, but don't look just at what the current interest rate is. Look at that fine print that says, what will it default to?
Okay.
And what is it based on? Is it prime plus 12% would be more appealing to me than a credit card that is prime plus 16%, right? Because you know what they're using as a benchmark. You know what they're using as a factor to go up. But the main thing I want you to ask, especially if you're worried about money getting tight at some point, which, let's be honest, you're not looking at a credit card unless you don't have a lot of cash hanging around usually, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're like me and some of the people that are out of debt who just use it for points and then turn that in for cash and make the credit card company pay you. That's always really fun.
Nice. Yeah.
Made Chase pay me last year quite a bit of money. That was really fun. But it can also be dangerous. If you don't have the money hanging around to just pay that, you don't want to get into that. But the thing that they don't tell you on those applications, and you will have to call and you will probably have to get a supervisor to find this out, is aside from the interest rate, what will your minimum payment be?
Okay.
They don't tell you for a reason, right? First of all, they don't have to because they don't know until you've applied what your real interest rate is going to be. So they can always hide behind, well, we have this factor of this and factor of that. But really, you just want to know. When I have people who are struggling and we have to move credit from one card to another, which we don't do that often, but when I have to recommend that as part of a solution, I'll ask them to look for a credit card that has this payment. And this is very dangerous. So outside of our program, if you find a credit card that charges you, let's say 1% of the balance, so that $10,000 balance is now $100 monthly payment, that can be very dangerous, although it's appealing, if the interest rate is relatively high because you can't get it paid off at that rate. If they're charging you 18% interest and they're allowing you a payment of 1% per month,
you're going to be paying on it forever.
Going backwards. You only get 12% in interest for the year and you're going backwards, right? So most companies won't let you go backwards. They'll charge you the interest plus a tiny little bit. But the way you beat that, and these things I wanted to talk about, how you can beat this game, beat them at their own game. The way you can beat that is to use a system like ours. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry, folks. The way that you beat that is to use a system like ours where you can speed up the process. So you can tolerate that low payment, even if it's at a high interest rate, because overall you end up, most of our clients are paying less than 3%, right?
Okay.
You can use a system like this, a money management system, to beat that interest rate down to an affordable range for yourself, which is different than just negotiating, although that is one of the things you can do. So you can use a system like ours. You can negotiate. So you can call your lender and say, I want a lower interest rate. I deserve a lower interest rate. By the way, how will that adjust my payment, if at all? Right?
Okay.
And really use that to your advantage. You can switch users. You can say, you know what? I'm just tired of paying you people and you're not being very nice to me and I'm going over here to this other bank. And so you can switch users. And you can transfer your balance, of course. You could say, look, I want to transfer my balance from here to another card and find a card that has some of the features that we're talking about that are useful. And also, if you're in the military, you can take advantage of that Service Members Civil Relief Act that we talked about a couple of shows ago, or that I talked about when you were away, and also the Military Lending Act. So the Military Lending Act says for active duty members and their qualified dependents, they pay no more than 36%. I know that's horrific, but 36% on loans. And the Service Member Civil Relief Act says on your credit cards, if you got that credit card debt before you became active, 6%. But you got to ask for them. You have to ask for them. And again, you know, if you want to read up on this stuff, you can just Google it. But a shortcut would be to go to the Attorney General's site and read that consumer guide, or call them and find out about it. Or you can contact us. But, you know, one way or the other, I just want people to be empowered a little bit about this. Don't feel like there's nothing you can do. Go in wise, eyes wide open. I like wise eyes right, wide open. Go in eyes wide open and make sure that you know not just what your interest rate is going to be, but what your monthly payment is going to be. And what it will fall to. Yeah.
A lot of info to take in, but all good, because everyone uses a credit card at one point or another. So all of these things are things you need to know. If people have more questions, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Perfect. You can also go to hugyourmoney.com, and we'll be back again next Saturday with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.